The Dutch colonel tried to rally his few remaining men, but they were beaten back remorselessly and sent tumbling down the ladders to the quarter-deck. Aberley and St. Francis went down after them, their men clamouring behind them like a pack of hounds with the scent of fox in their nostrils. Here they were faced with sterner opposition. The galleon's captain had formed up his men on the deck below the mainmast, and now their musketeers fired a close-range volley and charged the Lady Edwina's men with bared steel. The galleon's decks were smothered with a struggling mass of fighting men. Although Howell had reloaded the falconet, there was no target for him. Friend and foe were so intermingled that he could only watch helplessly as the fight surged back and forth across the open deck below him. Within minutes it was apparent that the crew of the Lady Edwina were heavily outnumbered. There were no reserves. Sir Francis had left no one but Howell aboard the caravelle. He had committed every last man, gambling all on surprise and this first wild charge. 24 of his men were leagues away across the water, manning the two pinnaces, and could take no part. They were sorely needed now, but when Howell looked for the tiny scout vessels, he saw that they were still miles out. Both had their gaff mainsails set, but were making only snail's progress against the southeaster and the big curling swells. The fight would be decided before they could reach the two embattled ships and intervene. He looked back at the deck of the galleon, and to his consternation realised that the fight had swung against them. His father and Aberley were being driven back towards the stern. The Dutch colonel was at the head of the counter-attack, roaring like a wounded bull and inspiring his men by his example. From the back ranks of the boarding party broke a small group of the Lady Edwina's men, who had been hanging back from the fight. They were led by a weasel of a man, Sam Bowles, a forecastle lawyer, whose greatest talent lay in his ready tongue, his skill at arguing the division of spoils and in brewing dissension and discontent among his fellows. Sam Bowles darted up into the galleon stern and dropped over the rail to the Lady Edwina's deck, followed by four others. The interlocked ships had swung round ponderously before the wind, so that now the Lady Edwina was straining at the grappling lines that held them together. In panic and terror, the five deserters fell with axe and cutlass upon the lines. Each parted with a snap that carried clearly to Howell at the masthead. "Avast that!" he screamed out, but not one man raised his head from his treacherous work. "Father!" Howell shrieked towards the deck of the other ship. "You'll be stranded! Come back! Come back!" His voice could not carry against the wind or the noise of battle. His father was fighting three Dutch seamen, all his attention locked onto them. Howell saw him take a cut on his blade and then riposte with a gleam of steel. One of his opponents staggered back, clutching at his arm, his sleeve suddenly sodden red. At that moment, the last grappling line parted with a crack, and the Lady Edwina was free. Her bows swung clear swiftly, her sails filled, and she bore away, leaving the galleon wallowing, her flapping sails taken all aback, making ungainly sternway. Howell launched himself down the shrouds, his palms scalded by the speed of the rope hissing through them. He hit the deck so hard that his teeth cracked together in his jaws, and he rolled across the planks. In an instant he was on his feet and looking desperately around him. The galleon was already a cable's length away across the blue swell, the sounds of the fighting growing faint on the wind. Then he looked to his own stern and saw Sam Bowles scurrying to take the helm. A fallen seaman was lying in the scupper, shot down by a Dutch murderer. His musket lay beside him, still unfired, the match spluttering and smoking in the lock. Howell snatched it up and raced back along the deck to head off Sam Bowles. He reached the whipstaff a dozen paces before the other man and rounded on him, thrusting the gun's gaping muzzle into his belly. "Back, you craven swine, or I'll blow your traitor's guts over the deck!" Sam recoiled, and the other four seamen backed up against him, staring at Howell with faces still pale and terrified from their flight. "You can't leave your shipmates. We're going back!" Howell screamed, his eyes blazing green with wild rage and fear for his father and Aberley. He waved the musket at them, the smoke from the match swirling around his head. His forefinger was hooked around the trigger. Looking into those eyes, the deserters could not doubt his resolve and retreated down the deck. Howell seized the whipstaff and held it over. The ship trembled under his feet as she came under his command. He looked back at the galleon, and his spirits quailed. He knew that he could never drive the Lady Edwina back against the wind with this set of sail. They were flying away from where his father and Abberley were fighting for their lives. At the same moment, Bowles and his gang realized his predicament.
"Nobody ain't going back, and there's naught you can do about it, young Henry," Sam cackled triumphantly. "You will have to get her on the other tack to beat back to your daddy. And there's none of us will handle the sheets for you, is there, lads? We have you strapped."
Hal looked about him hopelessly. Then, suddenly, his jaw clenched with resolution. Sam saw the change in him and turned to follow his gaze. His own expression collapsed in consternation as he saw the pinnace, only half a league ahead, crowded with armed sailors.
"Have at him, lads," he exhorted his companions. "He has but one shot in the musket, and then he's ours." "One shot and my sword," Hal roared, and tapped the hilt of the cutlass on his hip. "God's teeth, but I'll take half of you with me, glory in it." "All together," Sam squealed. "He'll never get the blade out of its sheath." "Yes, yes," Hal shouted. "Come, please, I beg you for the chance to have a look at your cowardly entrails."
They'd all watched this young wildcat at practice, had seen him fight Abberley, and none wanted to be at the forefront of the charge. They growled and shuffled, fingered their cutlasses, and looked away.
"Come on, Sam Bowles," Hal challenged. "You were quick enough from the Dutchman's deck. Let's see how quick you are to come at me now."
Sam steeled himself and then grimly and purposefully started forward. But when Hal poked the muzzle of the musket an inch forward, aiming at his belly, he pulled back hurriedly and tried to push one of his gang forward.
"Have at him, lad," Sam croaked.
Hal changed his aim to the second man's face, but he broke out of Sam's grip and ducked behind his neighbour. The pinnace was close ahead now. They could hear the eager shouts of the seamen in her. Sam's expression was desperate. Suddenly he fled. Like a scared rabbit, he shot down the ladder to the lower deck, and in an instant the others followed him in a panic-stricken mob. Hal dropped the musket to the deck and used both hands on the whipstaff. He gazed forward over the plunging bows, judging his moment carefully, then threw his weight against the lever and spun the ship's head up into the wind. She lay there, hove to. The pinnace was nearby, and Hal could see Big Daniel Fisher in the bows, one of the Lady Edwina's best bosuns. Big Daniel seized his opportunity and shot the small boat alongside. His sailors latched onto the trailing grappling lines that Sam and his gang had cut, and came swarming up onto the caravel's deck.
"Daniel!" Hal shouted at him. "I'm going to wear the ship around. Get ready to train her yards. We're going back into the fight."
Big Daniel flashed him a grin, his teeth jagged and broken as a shark's, and led his men to the yard braces. 12 men, fresh and eager, Hal exulted, as he prepared for the dangerous manoeuvre of bringing the wind across the ship's stern rather than over her bows. If he misjudged it, he would dismast her. But if he succeeded in bringing her round, stern first to the wind, he would have several crucial minutes in getting back to the embattled galleon. Hal put the whipstaff hard alee, and as she struggled wildly to feel the wind come across her stern and threatened to jib with all standing, Daniel paid off the yard braces to take the strain. The sails filled like thunder, and suddenly she was on the other tack, clawing up into the wind, tearing back to join the fight. Daniel hooted and lifted his cap. They all cheered him, for it had been courageously and skilfully done. Hal hardly glanced at the others, but concentrated on holding the Lady Edwina close-hauled, heading back for the drifting Dutchman. The fight must still be raging aboard her, for he could hear the faint shouts and the occasional pop of a musket. Then there was a flash of white off to leeward, and he saw the gaff sail of the second pinnace ahead, the crew waving wildly to gain his attention. Another dozen fighting men to join the muster, he thought. Was it worth the time to pick them up? Another 12 sharp cutlasses? He let the Lady Edwina drop off a point to head straight for the tiny vessel. Daniel had a line ready to heave across, and within seconds the second pinnace had disgorged her men and was on tow behind the Lady Edwina.
"Daniel!" Hal called him. "Keep those men quiet. No sense in warning the cheeseheads we're coming." "Right, Master Hal. We'll give them a little surprise. Batten down the hatches on the lower decks. We have a cargo of cowards and traitors hiding in our holds. Keep them locked down there until Sir Francis can deal with them.
Silently, the Lady Edwina steered in under the galleon's tumble-home. Perhaps the Dutchmen were too busy to see her coming in under shortened sail, for not a single head peered down from the rail above as the two hulls came together with a jarring, grinding impact. Daniel and his crew hurled grappling irons over the galleon's rail and immediately stormed up them hand over hand. Hal took only a moment to lash the whipstaff hard over, then raced across the deck and seized one of the straining lines. Close on Big Daniel's heels, he climbed swiftly and paused as he reached the galleon's rail. With one hand on the line and both feet planted firmly on the galleon's timbers, he drew his cutlass and clamped the blade between his teeth. Then he swung himself up, and only a second behind Daniel, dropped over the rail. He found himself in the front rank of the fresh boarding party. With Daniel beside him, and the sword in his right fist, he took a moment to glance around the deck. The fight was almost over. They had arrived with only seconds to spare, for his father's men were scattered in tiny clusters across the deck, surrounded by its crew and fighting for their lives. Half their numbers were down, a few obviously dead. A head, hacked from its torso, leered up at Hal from the scupper, where it rolled back and forth in a puddle of its own blood. With a shudder of horror, Hal recognized the Lady Edwina's cook. Others were wounded, and writhed, rolled, and groaned on the deck. The planks were slick and slippery with their blood. Still others sat exhausted, disarmed and dispirited, their weapons thrown aside, their hands clasped over their heads, yielding to the enemy. A few were still fighting. Sir Francis and Abberley stood at bay, below the mainmast, surrounded by howling Dutchmen, hacking and stabbing. Apart from a gash on his left arm, his father seemed unhurt. Perhaps the steel cuirass had saved him from serious injury, and he fought with all his usual fire. Beside him, Abberley was huge and indestructible, roaring a war cry in his own tongue when he saw Hal's head pop over the rail. Without a thought but to go to their aid, Hal started forward.
"For Frankie and St. George!"
he screamed at the top of his lungs, and Big Daniel took up the cry, running at his left hand. The men from the pinnaces were after them, shrieking like a horde of ravening madmen straight out of Bedlam. The Dutch crew were themselves almost spent. A score were down, and of those still fighting, many were wounded. They looked over their shoulders at this latest phalanx of bloodthirsty Englishmen rushing upon them. The surprise was complete. Shock and dismay was on every tired and sweat-lathered face. Most flung down their weapons, and like any defeated crew, rushed to hide below decks. A few of the stouter souls swung about to face the charge, those around the mast led by the Dutch colonel. But the yells of Hal's boarding party had rallied their exhausted and bleeding shipmates, who sprang forward and renewed their resolve to join the attack. The Dutchmen were surrounded. Even in the confusion and turmoil, Colonel Schroeder recognized Hal and whirled to confront him, aiming a cut backhanded at his head. His moustache bristled like lion's whiskers, and the blade hummed in his hand. He was miraculously unhurt and seemed as strong and fresh as any of the men that Hal had led against him. Hal turned the blow with a twist of his wrist and went for the counterstroke. In order to meet Hal's charge, the colonel had turned his back on Abberley, a foolhardy move. As he trapped Hal's thrust and shifted his feet to lunge, Abberley rushed at him from behind. For a moment, Hal thought he would run him through the spine, but he should have guessed better. Abberley knew the value of ransom as well as any man aboard. A dead enemy officer was merely so much rotting meat to throw overboard to the sharks that followed in their wake, but a captive was worth good gold guilders. Abberley reversed his grip and brought the steel basket of his cutlass hilt cracking into the back of the colonel's skull. The Dutchman's eyes flew wide open with shock. Then his legs buckled under him, and he toppled face down on the deck. As the colonel went down, the last resistance of the galleon's crew collapsed with him. They threw down their weapons, and those of the Lady Edwina's crew who had surrendered leapt to their feet, wounds and exhaustion forgotten. They snatched up the discarded weapons and turned them on the beaten Dutchmen, herding them forward, forcing them to squat in ranks with their hands clasped behind their heads, dishevelled and forlorn. Abberley seized Hal in a bear hug.
When you and Sam Bowles set sail, I thought it was the last we would see of you, he panted.
Sir Francis came striding toward his son, thrusting his way through the milling, cheering pack of his seamen.
You deserted your post at the masthead, he scowled at Hal, as he bound a strip of cloth around the nick in his upper arm and knotted it with his teeth.
Father, Hal stammered, I thought...
And for once you thought wisely.
Sir Francis's dark expression cracked, and his green eyes sparkled.
We'll make a warrior of you yet, if you remember to keep your point up on the riposte. This great cheesehead, he prodded the fallen colonel with his toe, was about to skewer you until Abberley trapped his noggin.
Sir Francis slipped his sword back into its scabbard.
The ship is not yet secure.
The lower decks and holds are crawling with them.
We'll have to drive them out.
Stay close to Abberley and me.
Father, you're hurt, Hal protested.
And perhaps I would have been more sorely wounded had you come back to us even a minute later than you did.
Let me see your wound.
I know the tricks Abberley has taught you. Would you piss on your own father?
He laughed and clapped Hal on the shoulder.
Ha! Perhaps I'll give you that pleasure a little later.
He turned and bellowed across the deck.
Big Daniel, take your men below and winkle out those cheeseheads who are hiding there. Master John, put a guard on the cargo hatches. See to it there is no looting. Fair shares for all. Master Ned, take the helm and get this ship on the wind before she flogs her canvas to rags. Then he roared at the others. I'm proud of you, you rascals. A good day's work. You'll each go home with 50 gold guineas in your pocket. But the Plymouth lassies will never love you as well as I do.
They cheered him, hysterical with the release from desperate action and the fear of defeat and death.
Come on,
Sir Francis nodded to Abberley and started for the ladder that led down to the officers' and passengers' quarters in the stern.
Hal followed at a run as they crossed the deck, and Abberley grunted over his shoulder,
Be on your mettle. There are those below who would be happy to stick a dirk between your ribs.
Hal knew where his father was going, and what would be his first concern. He wanted the Dutch captain's charts, log, and sailing directions. They were more valuable to him than all the fragrant spices and precious metals and bright jewels the galleon might be carrying. With these in his hands, he would have the key to every Dutch harbour and fort in the Indies. He would read the sailing orders of the spice convoys and the manifest of their cargoes. To him, they were worth £10,000 in gold.
Sir Francis stormed down the ladder and tried the first door at the bottom. It was locked from within. He stepped back and charged. At his flying kick, the door flew open and crashed back on its hinges.
The galleon's captain was crouched over his deck, his cropped pate wigless and his clothing sweat-soaked. He looked up in dismay, blood dripping from a cut on his cheek onto his silken shirt, its wide fashionable sleeve slashed with green. At the sight of Sir Francis, he froze in the act of stuffing the ship's books into a weighted canvas bag, then snatched it up and rushed to the stern windows. The casements and glass had been shot away by the Lady Edwina's culverins, and they gaped open, the sea breaking and swirling under her counter. The Dutch captain lifted the bag to hurl it through the opening, but Sir Francis seized his raised arm and flung him backwards onto his bunk. Abberley grabbed the bag, and Sir Francis made a courteous little bow.
"You speak English?" he demanded.
"No English," the captain snarled back, and Sir Francis changed smoothly into Dutch. As a Nortonier knight of the order, he spoke most of the languages of the great seafaring nations, French, Spanish, and Portuguese, as well as Dutch.
"You are my prisoner, meneer. What is your name?"
"Limbecher, captain of the first class, in the service of the VOC, and you, meneer, are a corsair," the captain retorted.
"You are mistaken, sir. I sail under letters of marque from His Majesty King Charles II. Your ship is now a prize of war."
"You flew false colours," the Dutchman accused.
Sir Francis smiled bleakly.
"A legitimate ruse of war."
He made a dismissive gesture and went on. "You are a brave man, meneer. But the fight is over now. As soon as you give me your word, you will be treated as my honoured guest. The day your ransom is paid, you will be free to go." The captain wiped the blood and sweat from his face with his silken sleeve, and an expression of resignation dulled his features. He stood and handed his sword hilt first to Sir Francis.
"You have my word. I will not attempt to escape."
"Nor encourage your men to resistance?" Sir Francis prompted him. The captain nodded glumly.
"I agree."
"I will need your cabin, Mynheer, but I will find you comfortable quarters elsewhere." Sir Francis turned his attention eagerly to the canvas bag and dumped its contents on the desk. Hal knew that from now on his father would be absorbed in his reading, and he glanced at Aberley on guard in the doorway. The negro nodded permission at him, and Hal slipped out of the cabin. His father did not see him go. Cutlass in hand, he moved cautiously down the narrow corridor. He could hear the shouts and clatter from the other decks as the crew of the Lady Edwina cleared out the defeated Dutch seamen and herded them onto the open deck. Down here it was quiet and deserted. The first door he tried was locked. He hesitated, then followed his father's earlier example. The door resisted his first onslaught, but he backed off and charged again. This time it burst open, and he went flying through into the cabin beyond, off balance and skidding on the magnificent oriental rugs that covered the deck. He sprawled on the huge bed that seemed to fill half the cabin.